chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. If you like this episode today, please go to Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen and leave us a 5-star rating. I'm delighted to have Karen Cranenberg on the show today. Karen is the CEO and owner of Polo & More and the Managing Director of Care Caribbean. Well, Karen, welcome to the Something Extra Podcast. I'm so delighted to have you join me today. Thank you so much for making the time.
You're welcome. And it's so lovely to be here. And thanks for having me.
Yes. So you and I were connected by our mutual dear friend, Teresa Sansentera. And so why don't we just spend half of the podcast just talking about how wonderful she is, Karen? What do you think?
Yeah, we could. We absolutely could spend probably the entire podcast talking about how amazing she is. She really is a tour de force, for want of a better word. She is an incredible woman. And our friendship has endured over 30 odd years from our college days.
Isn't that beautiful? I'm so grateful for friendships like that, that have stood the test of time. I've got a few of those as well, Karen, and they're just such a blessing. But, you know, I'm going to just kind of do a little side thing here that I just think is so funny. She's definitely a tech leader among tech leaders. I mean, she's a CIO, has been a CIO for major companies. But I also, and you and I both believe that she could equally be an amazing writer, journalist, or public relations agent for either one
of us. Absolutely. No, absolutely. She could. And, you know, Teresa's one of those people that whatever she puts her hand to is a success. Mm-hmm. You know, she's got that great energy about her. Of course, very smart, educated, you know. So whatever it is that, you know, she's got what we would call the Midas touch. So whatever she puts her hands on turns to gold.
I love that. The Midas touch. Well, for our listeners, I just think this is so funny. And she kind of did the same thing about me. But when she was introducing us, I'm going to read what she wrote about you, because I do. You know, if tech ever goes south, you know, she would definitely have a career, I believe, in public relations. But here's what she said. Lisa, Karen is a tour de force. I am pretty sure you usually say that about a person's work and not the person themselves. But just wait until you connect with her. She's traveled the world, 106 countries at last count. Yeah. We're going to talk a lot about that, Karen. She's been a philanthropist, an entrepreneur, an endurance athlete, an adventurer. Over the years, I've seen her knocked down, whether in a car accident, in the Amazon, falling off of a horse playing polo, or her most recent health challenges, but I've never once seen her not get back up, whether sailing, polo, Ironman, Everest, or the Norwegian Challenge. I'm sure to be missing something. Her athleticism, the spirit of adventure, always amazes me. Listen to this. I've traveled the world vicariously through her, whether it's running with the bulls in Pamplona, hanging out with the penguins in Antarctica, traveling the back roads of Timbuktu, riding a camel in Ethiopia, or any other amazing destination over the years. Her fashion sense is legendary, as is her eye for art. I mean, I'm telling you, we could just stop right there, couldn't we? Isn't that funny?
Yes, she's done, you know, she's done a great summation, I would say. I'm one of those people that can never sit still. So it's I'm constantly challenging myself and doing different things. Yes. You know, the sporting stuff is always something that I've been interested. I've played polo for a long time, you know. I started back in university days. I started doing marathons. When my knees started to give me problems, I said, I'm going to switch the triathlon instead, you know, shorter running distance, but, you know, it's sort of combination with the cycling and, you know, and the swimming. And I like to challenge myself. I've got to have my brain engaged or it doesn't work.
I love it. It's there is so much to dig into here. But, you know, before we dig into everything, Karen, take me back, you know, take me back to your childhood and how you grew up. And I want to know if you had that sense of adventure, even as a little girl. I mean, here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking Dora the Explorer.
Well, my friends call me that. I have some friends here in Miami that call me that. And they always said, where's Dora now?
You know? Where's Dora now?
Where's Dora? Yeah.
So tell me how you grew up, Karen. And was that part of your DNA?
So, oh gosh, my DNA, yes, definitely from a traveler. I was an only child. I am an only child. And my parents were married for many years before I came along. I think they'd given up by the time they had given up, you know, the children were coming when eventually my mother got pregnant. And so my mother always used to say to me that your father behaved like the only man that ever had a girl child because it was such a big deal when you finally arrived. My friends used to call me the golden child. But I have to say, for two parents that only had one child that were, you know, that they'd waited so long for, they were very easy with me in terms of they let me explore whatever it is I wanted to do and always supported me in whatever it is I was doing. You know, nothing was impossible. It didn't matter that I was a girl. You know, everything was possible. You can do it, whatever it is. So they've made me feel that I was capable of achieving anything. So that sort of sense of doing and being sort of came from them. They were big travelers themselves. So I kind of grew up traveling with them as a child. I went away to school when I was 14 to a high school in Canada. I was born in Guyana in South America. So I went away to school at 13. And then I went to a Swiss boarding school after that until 18. And then ended up living in the UK. I went to university in England. Mm-hmm. And then I did part of my master's here in St. Louis. And that's how I met Teresa.
Yes. yeah, I think you guys met at Webster. Yeah, I love that's so right. much of what you just said, though, Karen, and just the support of your parents and just helping you believe in yourself, right? I just, yeah. That is such a huge part, I believe, of our DNA. If we really, I mean, I tell people all the time, my dad, I was an only child too, you know, Karen.
Okay.
And I can remember, I mean, I can remember people telling me that after I was born, because my mom and dad, my dad was a Marine. My mom conceived when she was, I don't know, they got married when she was 17. I think she probably conceived when she was 19, but then had a little stillborn boy and they waited. I mean, my mom was 31, almost 32 when I was born, you know? And so kind of the same thing. They didn't know that they were even going to be able to have children. And people have told me the stories where my dad would just like be somewhere and he'd just be holding me up.
You know, I followed like my dad like, as a kid. I followed my dad around everywhere that I could.
Yeah.
Everywhere that I could when it was possible, I went. Wherever he was going, I was going. My dad and I were exceedingly close. You know, my mom was a disciplinarian, so she had to keep things in order. So our relationship was a little bit different. But my dad was, there was never anything. Once you're happy, he's happy. He never said no to anything because he realized my mother was there keeping the bus on the road in the right direction.
Yes. And we're more so alike than I knew, except for I didn't run with the bulls.
Extremely close. And so when he passed away a few years ago, It felt like if the world had fallen out from underneath me, because we'd always had this, you know, he was the first person I talked to in the morning, the last person I talked to at night. You know, we would talk about all sorts of things. My dad was a great reader. And, you know, he knew about everything. If it's everything you can imagine, he knew about. And he was in business. He was also in politics for, you know, a very long time. He was well respected in very well respected in the community, but he was just, he was well educated. I think that was it. He was well educated. He was well read, and you could talk to him about anything, and he made the time for you as best he could within his crazy schedule. He always had time. You know, he always had time for you. You know, my mom was the same, but in a different way, you know, in a different way. She was a philanthropist. So she was involved with every charity you could imagine that there was going. She was involved. So I always used to make a joke with her, and I said, people must run when they see you coming, because they know you're coming to beg for something, you know. But she was, you know, she was powerful in that respect. She got things done. She got people to, you know, to do things, to build things, to donate things. She was incredible. Like, she herself was a tour de force, my mother. She was quite a unique woman. Really.
Well, we're blessed women.
You know, I always say I won the parent lottery. Absolutely. Because I have to say, I had the best parents in the world. I was, you know, everybody says, you know, people that have a good relationship with their parents, but they were incredible parents. You know, I was lucky enough that I didn't need and want for anything. So financially sound. So, you know, that was the consideration. I had a great home. I had good friends, and I was supported by my parents by whatever it was I wanted to do. From, you know, I probably spent about 12 years at university from one degree to the next, and I finished them all. And my dad would keep going, yeah, okay. And, you know, supported by my parents, you know, okay, you want to keep learning? Yeah, okay, keep going, you know, sort of thing.
Yeah.
So they were very supportive parents. They were, to me, what good parents should be.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't hear that all the time. You hear the stories around, you hear the horror stories around the time, and you say,
yes,
I wonder why people have children, because why do you have children to treat them like this, you know? So it's, In that instance, I would say, yeah,
incredibly blessed.
I was blessed.
You kind of mentioned your educational background, and you do have a very diverse background here. You got a master's of arts in econ and finance. You got a bachelor in architecture. You got an econ diploma from the London School of Economics and Political Science, and a law conversion from University of Westminster. My goodness, how is this diverse background, do you believe, Karen, really influence your professional journey?
Well, I would say, you know, the thing about it is I've got it all covered. I used to say to people, listen, I can build a house, I can deal with the financing, I can sue the builder when it all goes wrong.
That's good.
You know, I've got it covered. I don't need to hire anybody else. But from a perspective that, you know, in the business that I'm in now, it gives me a business vision. It definitely gives me, certainly the contractual side of things I'm able to deal with and look at. And I also, my business actually has an artistic side to it. So I guess the architecture sort of comes in that perspective, very much so, because I create things for other people. So that's very much a part of who I am. I'm a collector. I'm an art collector as well too. So, but that's something I do on the side. Actually, Teresa's been coming with me the last few years to Art Basel in Miami, because I go there. I go every year. Even when I'm not here, I come in for it. So Teresa's come down to meet me here for the last 2 years to, you know.
Wonderful. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Well, I'm going to have to tell her I need an invitation to that, because I'm a big, not an artist, but I love art. I love it. I really appreciate it. Well, today, Karen, you are the CEO and the owner of Polo and More. You're the editor-in-chief of the magazine. You're also the director of Care Caribbean, or yeah. Caribbean, however you want to pronounce it. But tell me, because you said you started playing polo in college, I think. But, you know, tell me a little bit about the impetus of how you got into polo. What trends are you seeing in that world right now? And, you know, how are you seeing it evolve?
Well, I started playing after college, actually. I had a boyfriend. Of course, and I'm living in England at this point. I had a boyfriend that played polo, and he was the impetus to get started to play.
Okay.
I had ridden all my life. I hadn't played polo, but I had ridden all my life. And so when I started, I spent a lot of time initially with him going to polo, watching his games, you know, and I was fascinated by the sport, and I said, I think I want to give this a try. And so funnily enough, I had a girlfriend, a very, very good girlfriend of mine who from Finland, who lived in England, and her now husband is Argentinian, and they were getting married in Argentina. So we were going to Argentina for the wedding. And so I connected with a handicapped six-school polo player there. And I said, listen, I'm coming to Argentina for this time. I want intensive polo lessons. So we agreed and made our deal. He came and picked me up every day. He took me to the arena. He took me down to the polo field. I spent some time after, and that was the end of the story from there. And then I subsequently got into, initially, I was doing a charitable event for somebody at a club that I played at. And that was the beginning. I started that way with a 40-goal polo match in England. 40-goal polo is not something that happens a lot. Mm-hmm. At any given time, you know, there might be 6 or 7 handicapped, 10 handicapped polo players, which is the highest handicap that you can have. So it's the reverse from golf. So the higher the handicap, the better the player. The lower the handicap, the worse the player. So putting together a 40-goal game was quite something at that time. This is since 1999. And it started off as a one-off. And it grew from there. I saw a niche in the market at the time. There wasn't a lot of sponsorship in polo back in those days. And, you know, what you could do then was quite, there was professional, you know, the game was the professional game. And, but really what was a big part of what was to come was the sort of, the, I want to say the social aspect, the sponsor aspect of it. And that's the direction I went in. So mm-hmm. I started out initially, you know, working for sponsors, bringing sponsors into the game for the club that I played at. And then it kind of spread from there.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the things that has changed a lot in the game, is that there is certainly a lot more corporate sponsorship in polo. Not to the same degree that there are in things like football and basketball and, you know, soccer in England, because it's a different market and it works differently. Professional polo comes at different levels. You've got the high goal, which in this country goes up to 26 goals. In Argentina, it goes all the way up to 40. You know, you've got medium goal polo, which is sort of up to 16 goals. And then you've got low goal polo, which is anything from, you know, zero to six or eight goals, mm-hmm. you know? So there's different levels. But one of the things that polo that is standard throughout, it's very patron focused. So there's always somebody that, there's always one person that pays the bill. Or in the lower goals, you might find two patrons that play together and they split a team and they pay those bills together. But the professionals are paid by a patron. So when you get to the high goal, there's one patron. He pays the bills. He's the man in charge, you know? So whereas there's a certain element, there might be a certain element of sponsorship, it's also somehow tied to that patron or who that patron is more often than not.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of charity events around polo. There's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of corporate events that use polo as a means for entertainment as well. And so that, you know, the game has expanded in that way, I'd say, in the last 25 years.
Okay. So Karen, now you've inspired me. We have a polo field that is literally 1 mile from us, and we've never been. So, you know, Anheuser-Busch, right? You know, yes. Anheuser-Busch.
Yes, yes. Yes. They're big sponsors. They play. The brothers play polo.
Yes, I know. And so the field, the Anheuser-Busch, Billy Busch has a field about we can hear it on a Saturday. We can hear the announcer, but we've never gone. So now you've inspired me. Okay. So that is, I'm definitely going to go to one of those. And, I'm really curious now, but tell me a little bit about being the managing director of CARE, Caribbean or Caribbean. Can you elaborate on the organization? Yeah, tell our listeners, what is it that you do? Yes, what's the mission?
It's a business that, I started, with my cousin, and we deal with basically medical supplies for laboratories and hospitals, and our focus is Caribbean and Latin America. So we deal with everything that you can possibly think of, from equipment to consumables.
Mm-hmm. So and you're really offering those things to, you have international clients. Right.
We have international clients. A lot of our suppliers are international as well. So our suppliers are out of Europe, out of India. Of course, we have suppliers in the Asian market. So China, Malaysia, Vietnam. A lot of our suppliers here from the US as well, too. And but our client base is mainly Caribbean and Latin America.
Gotcha. Okay. Well, I have one more question for you, and then we need to take a quick break. And I've got a lot more that I want to talk to you about. But this one is really, I find this so fascinating that you've actually been to over 106 countries. And I think, you've set up polo matches in a lot of those countries, and, you've done a lot of different things around the globe, but you kind of describe you as a global nomad.
Nomad.
Yes. And so what I really would love to know from you, and then we'll dig into a lot more after the break, but how do you personally prepare to adapt to so many different cultures, and environments? Because they're all different, are they not, Karen?
They are all different. I always say to people that travel is an education in itself. So you're going there to learn from the people, to learn from the culture, and that's your takeaway from it all when you go there. So there's always that fascination, that excitement when you're going someplace, and you're going someplace new, someplace that's different, so it's different preparing, I would say, preparing for a trip like going to Everest for going to a trip like to Mali, which I went to Mali last year, which is very different. Mali is a country I've been wanting to go to for the last 12 years since really their problems. They've had a lot of problems with rebels and stuff like that in the last 12 years, and it's not really been that safe to go. And they had a little bit of a quiet patch where last year, and I said, I'm going to take this opportunity to go here now, I packed my bags and, but the thing about it is I'm a planner as well, too. So I always make sure that, for example, when I went to Mali, that I had somebody had recommended a guide that they had used. She's a journalist. It's a guide that she had used. So I made sure that, I have those things all lined up before I go somewhere. I don't just show up and hope for the best, on a wing and a prayer and hope for the best. Because in some parts of the world, that's just downright dangerous. There are people that do that, but it's not smart, and I'm not one of those.
Right.
Right. So, a lot of places that, of course, people, they say here, they are genuinely dangerous. A lot of it is, there's a lot of propaganda behind it as well, too. So you kind of have to weigh the balance up of what the reality is and what's, what's real and what's not, and being in touch and having contacts on the ground makes a huge difference in terms when you're planning, when you're planning a trip and you're planning to go somewhere. There's some place you're planning to go and you contact, you have a guide, you have a local contact, and you say, hey, listen to that. And they said, listen, maybe it's not such a good time to come now. It's not such a good time to come. So you don't necessarily are only, a lot of people, they only look at what, they only see the propaganda and they only look at, all the warnings that they are to don't travel here, don't go there. But sometimes the reality on the ground is very different. It's only it's the locals that give you the real reality of what's happening. For places that are, I want to say sketchy, but that have their problems. Yeah. Have had their problems, So you can't blindly go and say, I'm going here with no preparation. That's not going to work.
Yes, not wise. Well, goodness
not at
gracious,
all.
There's so much goodness packed into that one. But we do need to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Karen on the Something Extra podcast.
In business, the tendency is to seek out partners who are bigger, faster, stronger. When it comes to IT, you should be looking for smarter, faster, better. That's just what you'll find with the talented technologists at Technology Partners. Our experts develop custom solutions to tackle your most complex challenges, all to simplify your processes in the smartest, most efficient way possible. The time to be swift and nimble starts now. Go to technologypartners.net/solutions and see what's possible.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Something Extra podcast with Karen Cranenberg. So, Karen, we've been talking about all kinds of things. I want to stick with this for just a minute, but I've read several of your articles that you have written.
Yeah.
The one about Mad About Morocco and then the Palace of the Sands. So I have questions about those. You talk about Morocco, and you say Morocco should be on everyone's bucket list. So tell
Absolutely.
Me more. Tell
Absolutely.
Me more.
Morocco is one of those enchanting places. It's got history. It's got color. And it's a safe place, you know. So if you're looking to, you know, for example, if you've never sort of been to that part of Africa, you're looking for somewhere to go in North Africa, you say, you know, where would I like to start? It's a good starting point, definitely. You know, the people are genuinely very friendly, very welcoming. Tourism, of course, is a huge part of business for Morocco. So, you know, they welcome tourists. And as I said, the culture, the history, the food, one of my favorite cities in Morocco is Marrakech. The whole vibe of the Medina, it's a place that you go, you definitely need somebody to walk with you through there, because you'll get lost otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a city. The Medina is like a city in itself, but the things that you see and you find and the smells and the sounds and the just absolutely incredible, really incredible. I had the pleasure actually last year after my trip to Mali, I went to a place also in Morocco called Chefchaouen. It's up in the north. It's the Blue City.
Mm.
It's an incredible city that the walls are, everything is blue, different shades of blue.
Ooh,
and somebody had been talking, oh, incredible, absolutely incredible and vibrant, you know. And somebody had been talking to me, and I'd be saying, yeah, you know, I've been to Morocco many times. And I said, next time I go to Morocco, I've got to go to Chefchaouen. So I took the chance after Mali, because I was going to Marrakech. I have a friend that owns a beautiful boutique hotel called Janan and Tamsin in Marrakech, and I was going to visit. She herself is an architect, an artist, a writer, incredible lady. So I was going to visit them, and I said, I'm going to take a few days and go north to Chefchaouen and come back via Tangier, which is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
The Blue City, incredible. It's different from, you know, other parts of Morocco, so you see another side of it. And that's one of the interesting things about Morocco. It has different, you know, yes, there's Marrakech, you can go to Tangier, you can go to Fez, you've got Chefchaouen, you know, you know, just different. And it feels, and each city has its own vibe,
mm-hmm.
so to speak.
Okay, you sold me.
It is a beautiful country.
One,
the people are amazing. As I said, you know, it's definitely something that should be on everybody's bucket
yes.
list.
Yes, okay.
For sure.
I'm sold. Well, Palace of the Sands is a story about your second trip, I believe it was, to Egypt. And you really, like, you yeah. told Egypt before, and you said you weren't really that excited about going again, but you
yeah.
did. And you wrote beautifully, Karen,
yeah.
about the Siwa Oasis in
yes.
the northwest corner of
the Libyan desert. In the Libyan desert, yeah.
Yeah.
So I had a, you know, Egypt is one of those places, and I've subsequently been back to Egypt since during COVID, which was an incredible experience. Egypt, of course, tourism is a big thing for Egypt. And so there's lots of people. Usually when you go, you know, crowds everywhere. So on my this was my second, my third trip back to Egypt was this trip to Siwa. But it was completely different. It is an oasis in the Libyan desert, and it's incredible. It's peaceful. It's calm. You know, my friends had taken over the entire resort, so it was just a group of friends that we were able to wander and roam around. You know, kind of wander and roam around. You know, and it was also a different. You know, a very different side of Egypt that we were able to see, which was fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
So we went back to Egypt during COVID, when people weren't really traveling. And it was amazing to go down to places like the you know, Luxor and Aswan, and, you know, into the Valley of the Kings and places like that, when there weren't a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And be able to walk around and for them to open tombs for you that they would never do usually. And there's hardly any people around you. So it was a completely different experience. And I'm so glad that I went back again.
Yeah.
Because I had that experience of, you know, we traveled a lot during COVID. And a lot of people said, oh, we're not going anywhere. And I said, this is a great opportunity to get out, to travel.
Yes.
To have freedom, to have, you know, there's not a lot of crowds around you. Because in some places that you go to, there are people, there are crowds around you. You know, we went to Mauritania. I went back to Egypt. I went back to Kenya. I went to Zanzibar during COVID. Where else did we go? We went back to Tanzania, to Botswana during COVID, Seychelles, Jordan. I did a lot of traveling during COVID, and with no fear of, you know, taking the necessary precautions.
Mm-hmm.
Taking the necessary precautions, you know, but, you know, you were able to travel with a certain amount of freedom and flexibility in terms of, on one side, you had to do all the COVID testing and do all the paperwork and all of that for every destination that you went to, in and out. But on the other hand, you also had that sort of ease because the crowds that usually meet you in most places, and a lot of places, not everywhere, but the crowds that you usually encounter, they didn't have because people mm-hmm. weren't traveling.
Sure.
You know, and they were happy to see you, that you've taken the time to come to us during
they
this
were
time
grateful.
To visit. They were
I'm
grateful.
Sure. They were so grateful to have some tourists,
They were grateful. They were grateful.
Well,
you know?
Tell me, hey, Karen, tell me about the Adrar Emilio Resort. It's like one of the top three environmental hotels in the world that you stayed at. And
yes.
It got me so curious that I went to TripAdvisor. And I looked up all these testimonials about this resort.
Yeah.
And here's some of the words: magnificent, rare, unique, a magical experience. The food was fantastic. You had dinner by candlelight every night.
Yeah.
But the one that got me, I was like, I'm not sure about no electricity. Just like, I'm
you know, the thing about it is you're in the middle of the desert.
Yes.
So you're not, you know, that's to be expected, and you definitely do have enough light to be able to get around. For me, one of the biggest and most amazing things about that resort, so they've built you know, all of these huts, villas out of, you know, eco-friendly materials, so sand, mud, and they're furnished with luxury furnishings, you know, so they look beautiful inside. Of course, there's no air conditioning, so it can get a bit warm, but you can sleep outside if you want to. They put day beds outside, so you can sleep outside.
Mm-hmm.
I took it one step further, and they built a bed for me up on the roof of the spa.
Oh,
so
nice.
I went to sleep under the and they lit it all the way for me with candles so that I could find, you know, with like lanterns, so that I could find my way there at night. They blew them out, and I went to sleep, and they did the same thing every night. And I would wake up in the morning, you know, I would go to sleep with the stars at night, and I would wake up in the morning with the oasis in front of me, this white mm-hmm. mountain on the left and this oasis in front of me and the sun rising up over it. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Really incredible. Yeah.
The pictures I bet you got, Karen, were just
amazing.
Magnificent.
Amazing.
Could go into a magazine, I'm sure. Well, Karen,
yeah.
I want to move into something a little bit different, and, you know, life is not always about unicorns and rainbows. We all face challenges, and you're no different. You know, Teresa describes you as a tour de force. You know, let me ask you, how do you maintain resilience? How You know, I know you've had challenges just like all of us do, but how do you maintain a positive mindset through those challenges?
Well, you know, my dad always used to tell me, my dad always used to say to me, he believes in the power of positive thinking. And, you know, the battles that you fight are the ones that you think you can win. And so that really has to be your focus. I'm going to take on the things that I think I can deal with, the things I can overcome. Mm-hmm. If you try to deal with everything, you can't deal with everything. It's like work. It's the same thing. You can't deal with everything yourself. You kind of have to balance it out as to what I can and what I can't do. You know? So as you said, yes, over the years, really most recently, I was diagnosed with cancer in February 2022. So we're 2 years in this journey now. And one of the first things I said to my doctor, I said, my story doesn't end here. So you need to do whatever it is you need to do to get me back to where I was before, do it, you know? Mm-hmm. And then focus going forward. I'm coming out at the end of this. I am coming out at the end of this, you know, and I need to try and live as normal a life as possible as I can whilst I'm going through this. And no, don't give up hope, you know. Mm-hmm. Hope is very important in this process, that hope and belief that I'm not the end of my story, and I'm coming out of this at the other end.
I love that. That's beautiful. Yeah. And hope is so important. When you lose hope, that's when, you know, you got to hope and you got to believe.
There's no life. Without hope, there's no life. You know?
Yeah. Amen. So, I agree with that. Well, let me ask you this. I mean, we don't have the time to get into too much of this, but I'm hoping that our listeners will hear this podcast, get to meet you, and start following you. I have a challenge for you at the end. Maybe you're working on it, but you know, you've scaled Mount Everest, you've participated in all these Ironmans and so many unique adventures. What lessons have you learned about yourself by doing those, Karen?
What lessons have I learned by myself? Well, first of all, I've learned that I can challenge myself, definitely. And that's an important thing I think that all of us need to do. You need to push your boundaries a little bit beyond what you think is possible and what you're capable of. So that it's certainly taught me that mm-hmm. I'm capable maybe of a lot more than I think that I am.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So, and with the right, you know, with, of course, with certain things, with the right training and support and everything, you're going to reach where you need to.
Right. Yeah. Because climbing Mount Everest, I know we don't have the time to go too much into detail, but you got to prepare for that. You had to prepare to learn.
I trained for 9 months for that trip to Everest.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah. I know.
Well, let me ask you, you've already mentioned your dad, and I know both you and I have talked in a sidebar conversation even about like the awesomeness of both of our parents, and we're very, very blessed about that. But you said, you know, your dad used to give you just so much advice, and my dad passed away a couple years ago too, Karen. So both of our dads are gone. But can you remember, you've already talked a little bit about having that positive mindset, but can you remember any other advice that your dad gave you?
God, so many things.
Yeah, because you need to write a book. That's what my challenge is going to be to you.
So many things. Actually, both of them, my mother and father, both of them had a lot of sayings for different things, you know. One of the things, there were two things I was remembering as I was thinking about your, you know, you were asking about, you know, something extra and what good leaders should have. Yes. And there were two things I was remembering as I was thinking about it, and things that my dad told me, you know, like one of them is be a good listener. You know, no one knows everything about everything, you know? And mm-hmm. so you have to be opening to hearing and taking suggestions and listening to other people, hearing their ideas, filtering out what's, you know, what works and what doesn't work, but you have to be willing to listen. You can't shut yourself off, you know?
That's paramount. Yes.
It is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said one of the other things he's famous for telling me all the time is, you know, he said you have to be likable. And he said, it's easier. One of his, he always used to say to me, it's easier to catch flies with honey than with vinegar.
Yes, it's so true.
You
Great words of wisdom. I love it.
Yeah, you know? So
Well,
you can get so much more accomplished with that approach than, you know, with the
sure.
honey approach than with the vinegar approach. You will go a lot further and
Not
get
further.
a lot more accomplished than if you
So
just, you
true.
know, yeah.
So true. Well, are those your something extras? When I ask you what is something extra that
Oh
you
my
really need,
gosh.
you said there's so many.
But you know the thing about thing is that I think leaders, and this covers everybody, not only, you know, leaders in business, leaders in politics, leaders in religion, all of these kinds of things. There's so many things that they that what makes a good leader. Common sense, number one. And I don't think there's a lot of that around these days. As somebody said to me the other day, common sense isn't
Yes.
common anymore, which is true. It's just when you listen, you know, when you listen to leaders and politicians and, you know, you listen to them and you think, for real, did you just say that? No, you didn't. You know? So common sense is very important. Vision. You have to have, you know, you have to have vision. So you need to have, I think, a big picture, you know, a big picture game plan. If you plan it, if you're doing something, if you're in business, as I said, if you're a politician, if you're a religious leader guiding people, you need to have a plan and see beyond, you know, what can be. You know, there's an old saying. There was a preacher, an American preacher, called Dorman Peele, and he said he was one of those people that was famous for popularizing this notion of, you know, about positive thinking. And he had a saying that was shoot for the moon, and even if you miss, you'll land among the stars.
Yes.
You know? So you have to set yourself ambitious goals, think big, work hard, and work hard to achieve them. You mightn't necessarily always get directly to where you want to go, but the journey is also important. It might take you somewhere else. It might take you somewhere else that's even more interesting, you know? So, you know, that's important. So vision, very important. Optimism also very, very important, you know? You know, people want to follow leaders that are going somewhere, you know? You know, you've got to be going up rather than, you know, rather than down, you know? And you know, our politician, you know, our politicians, business executives, you know, preachers, that, you know, they're, I want to say they're in the business of selling the dream of hope. And as I just said to you just now, without hope, there's no
Could not
life,
agree more.
you know? So hope is very important in the process. And you know, hope and optimism, I think, kind of go hand in hand in it. But you kind of have to carry people along with you that with this dream that they have to believe. They have to believe as well. So it can't be just you. You have a team around you. You have a country around you. You need to sell them on these ideas and carry them, you know, and carry them along
Well,
with
Karen,
you.
when you have the
Of
vision, when you
course.
have the hope, you give the people that are around you a path, right? And because, you know, they don't want to, like, to your point, if you don't have hope yourself, why are they going to want to follow you know, somewhere that's a dead end, right? I
Absolutely.
mean, people want to
You
win
know,
in life, you know, not, yeah.
that people want to win. It's this story of the blind leading the blind. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't necessarily work. You know, people want somebody with vision that has hope, and they want to see a better, either future for themselves, a better future for the country, you know, a way that they can achieve in business. That's what they want to see. It's that po
I
is
love
that
it.
positivity.
Yes,
It's that
I love it.
positivity, you
I
know?
love it.
So, and then of course you've got to surround yourself with positive people. You don't want to have people around you that are dragging you down. And also, you can't do everything, you know? It's impossible to be great at everything. So you need to surround your people. You need to build a team that everybody brings something to the table that makes that lifts you all up together as one. So that's, you know, that's important. And of course, being a good, that comes into the idea of being a good delegator. You have to know when to let go and who to hand this over to and who to hand that over to, and, you know, and together you pull it together.
It's as a so team, good, you know. Karen, I love it. I have loved this time with you. Teresa was right. And I need to come on one of the art excursions with you guys so we can see one another face to face and I can get more of Karen Cranenberg. So thank you so much for making the time to be on the show today. And our prayers and thoughts are with you as you are continuing this journey. And at the end of the journey, girl, you are going to, your story, it's like I told you before, your story is going to be someone else's survival guide when you get through this.
Well, I'm thrilled if I'm able to help somebody, because I know how important it was for the help I received from other people to carry me, sustain me through this journey. And so I think you always have to pay it forward, you know? So I have to help someone else that's going through the journey, and I'm more than happy to. This, you know, there's no big secret in this, you know? There's so many cancer, you know, people that have suffered from cancers. There's so many survivors out there. And if you can do something to help another person and ease the journey for them, why not?
Agree more. You know, well, thank you again. This has been such a fun, this is going to be the most fun thing I do all day. Well, I don't know. I had a birthday dinner tonight with my family. You know, that's probably going to be the best thing. And then being with you is going to be the second thing. So thank you so much for making the time today, Karen.
It's my pleasure, and thank you so much for having me on. It was lovely virtually meeting you, and yes, I absolutely hope to meet you face-to-face soon. Come to Miami to our Basel with us.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.